Hi, everybody. It's Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right Senator Dan McKay. Hi, Dan.
Hello, Natalie. Hello, everybody. And hello to the listeners, just for Shireen.
And on the political left, Shireen Gorbani joins us. Hi, Shireen.
Hello. Thanks for tuning in. And hi, Dan and Natalie. Nice to see you.
Yeah, always great to be with my friends on the left and the right. And I want to start out today. I just have been thinking about this. It's gotten a lot of news. But I want to start out by talking about Senator Romney going public with what he thinks are the three biggest issues confronting our country. Shireen and Dan, on that list is China, climate, and the debt. And this is a familiar narrative of our junior senator. He started out by talking about China. He's been involved in the climate things, and we know that he's a fiscal conservative. I wondered, though, Dan, is that your list of the three biggest issues confronting our country right now? China, climate, and debt?
You know, it's interesting that that the senator sees it in that order, maybe. But I definitely see, like, global competition with America. So China is our number one competitor at the moment on a global economic scale. And then I would add to it, like, definitely, you know, if you're talking about long-term sustainability within the country, debt is a big problem. But then, you know, is climate the next part? I would probably put our aging infrastructure above, like, climate consideration, just because of how I feel that we can actually do something about the aging infrastructure and may not have as big an impact on the climate side of things. But that said, certainly these are the issues in addition to infrastructure that the rest of the country is thinking about.
What would be on your list, Shireen?
As you can imagine, my list would be a little bit different. I would include climate. I think the climate chaos that we're experiencing, there was just an article that said that, you know, our children, somebody who is six, like my child, will experience three times the level of catastrophic environmental events that we are experiencing. And it seems like we're experiencing a lot right now. And of course, as Dan's alluding to, there's a huge cost associated with that. So I think tying infrastructure to climate resilience is critically important, but also dealing with the climate disaster that we're currently living in. You know, for me, when I'm thinking about our country, and I think the debates that we're seeing right now about what's happening, and I know we're going to get into it, but I would say, you know, the outsized influence and role of special interests in our politics, and the fact that we have a really, and Natalie, you've talked about this before, a government that I'm not sure is functional. And we're dysfunctional in many ways that are critical. And then, you know, I think that global competition piece and thinking about what war and peace looks like as we, you know, move forward in this world that we live in is on my mind. But I, of course, am always more focused on those kind of kitchen table issues. How are families in this country making ends meet? And unfortunately, too many are not.
You know, in the political middle, I mean, I get the China thing and I get the debt. I guess on the debt, I would think of entitlement reform as the issue that I would say this country needs to confront. That's the way we get at debt. To your point, Dan, I like spending on infrastructure, but I want to reform entitlements. And then I just think division is the numero uno problem in our country right now, is the lack of unity that we have. So, hey, but on the infrastructure, let's go right to what's happening inside the Beltway right now. This is the infrastructure bill that is, everybody wants to see it passed, but some want to see it, you know, tied up with the other large human infrastructure bill. Some will hold out, you know, on the left to not pass the bill. They've scheduled to vote for Thursday, the day this program airs. Shireen, what is the color commentary from the left on these gymnastics in Washington on the infrastructure bill?
I would say the color commentary from me is that we need to end the filibuster. And I know this is something that you have talked about before, but the reason that we're in this position where we're trying to move through absolutely every part of the Biden agenda in this moment is because we know that we cannot move forward. We don't have Republicans who are willing to work with us on any number of issues that the American people would like to see, whether that's things like, allowing Medicare and Medicaid to negotiate down the price of drugs, whether it's, childcare, even roads, it seems like we're having a hard time agreeing on. So everything has to be packaged in this way that really makes very little sense to the public. And we're doing it because we have a dysfunctional Senate.
Dan, I would love to be in the office as Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden discuss this stalemate that Pelosi has, where key portions of her caucus are not wanting to support the Biden agenda, because they want to go for the whole thing, the whole enchilada. Break it down for us, Dan, from your perspective.
Yeah, it would be fascinating to be a fly on the wall for those conversations, right? I can totally see where that would actually be really interesting.
Biden needs this so badly, right? With the tough things that he's had going, he needs this infrastructure bill to pass, and it actually really helps him if it's bipartisan.
Yeah, and that's what's always interesting, right? And it's funny that we need more unity. We kind of all, I think, agree with that. So we need more unity, and then at the same point, we need more bipartisan relationships and measures and that kind of thing. And then you look at D.C. and you talk about, boy, this is really dysfunctional, and it's always when one party is in the majority in both houses but just can't push through their agenda in the first couple years of their administration. And that push or that pressure or those kinds of things to make dramatic changes to process or those kinds of things is always the opposite of what the American people want, which is more bipartisanship. Yeah. And so it's really sad, but I think the infrastructure bill, look, the price tag is shocking, and it should be shocking. And there should be a lot of people, not just Republicans, but independents and Democrats for that matter, like you see Senator Sima down in Arizona asking questions about or even making political statements against the infrastructure bill, saying it's just too much.
Mm-hmm. So, but while we're saying it's too much, this has been paid for. And I just have to reiterate, unlike the Trump tax cuts that we saw, that frankly weren't. And so when we have a bill that is paid for over 10 years, that is includes some of the most popular pieces of legislation across party lines, it is very disappointing to me that we simply cannot get the traction to get any of this done. People want to see our government programs like Medicare and Medicaid be able to negotiate drug prices. We're not getting that done because of special interests and because of the pressure that puts on individuals. So this goes back to my argument. I think we need a large-scale reform that addresses the influence that special interests have in controlling what we can get done.
Shireen, I want to double down though on what you're saying there. When we say this is popular, it's championed by our Senator Romney. This bill has in it things like a smart intersections. So the idea of helping our traffic signals work better all around the country. It has a lot of wildfire mitigation. Tell me we wouldn't like that this past summer. It has money in our state for the Central Utah Project, for the Western Area Power Administration, for emergency watershed. It has, Dan, isn't the number like $3.5 billion for Utah? Is that the number they're throwing around on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, that's close to the number that we're seeing, from what it impacts in Utah. But again, yes, these are federal mandated or federal setup and required, these are what the projects are going to be, not going to state leaders and having state leaders set them up. And so I guess I would scratch
it's
my head
money,
just a
Dan.
Little bit and say, yeah, I know it's actually our money, right? Yeah.
It's our money.
It's not their money.
Well, but I'm just having fun with you there.
Said,
but Dan,
I understand
they come
where
in
they're
and
coming
they,
from.
They,
I just think that's not where, that's why I'm not there.
When they invest in broadband, whether it's federal money or state, it's our broadband. When they invest in Utah airports, it's our airports. So, I think there's a broad consensus this needs to happen. It's just that there's it's politicized. And by the way, I'll get both of you to comment on this. If you just unpack this for very long, right, we face another default on our, you know, credit worthiness very shortly here. We have our Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen saying that we run out of money. The U.S. government runs out of money to pay its bills October 18th. This will force a lot of things. There's threats of another government shutdown. I'm sure the stock market will not react well to this. And, you know, this notion of not raising the debt limit, playing politics with something that important, the credit worthiness of the United States of America, this doesn't look good, Dan, for either party, by the way.
Well, and I think, you know, you highlight the market issues, right? Well, the market was off 562 points today, right? And so the market's probably reacting similarly and creating instability. So, yeah, all this ties up to what you said, which is all of these movements, all of these, the juggernaut pushing around, having it be a partisan agenda one way or the other, I'd say it's not creating institutional trust. And right. That's the problem, right, Natalie?
Yeah, that's right. Shireen, we'll give you the last word in this segment on just the government shutdown and all of this maneuvering in Washington.
Well, when we come back from break, I might like to ask you a little bit more about it, because I know that you have an area of expertise here. But what I would just say is that this is money that we have already spent. This is really, I think, should be troubling to every single person watching Republicans simply say, we're not doing this. The Democrats got on board. We did it under Trump. This is something that we need to do. But Republicans at this point in our Senate are saying they would rather torch our economy, our global stability, than to make movement on this. And that is absolutely where the Republican Party is right now, as far as I'm concerned, and it's very troubling.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we have been talking about a lot of issues, and we just want to start out this segment by just finishing up our discussion about the debt limit. Shireen, what's the question you want to ask me?
Well, I just know that you do follow this closely and have quite a bit of expertise in this area. You know, what are you thinking as you're watching what's happening with the debt limit debate or inaction?
You know, what I found the most interesting is that the Treasury Secretary put out a date, October 18th. This was a way of her saying, you've got to solve this problem. And by being very specific, it told them the rules they have to play within, because they will never let us default on our creditworthiness. And so she's drawn the line in the sand. I have a hunch that she's got a few other things she could do, but boy, don't get too close to that line. It's not something you should play with.
I agree.
Yeah, in other issues, let's go really, really local here and talk for a minute about Senator Mike Lee. He's doing some interesting things. Shireen, I'll go to you first on what's happening with Silicon Slopes and their big event. They're bringing in the Apple CEO, Tim Cook, and he's going to share the stage with Senator Mike Lee. Tell us more.
So I saw that this was announced on the Silicon Slopes Instagram page. I'm a big fan of Instagram, spent some time there. And I had noticed that a few people raised concerns. So the image is just Tim Cook and saying, okay, he's coming to the Silicon Slopes Summit. First of all, huge get. Congratulations to them. That's great. And then in the text, it says, we'll be appearing on stage with Senator Mike Lee. So over the last few days, I have to say I've noticed that as people say, even just things like, yikes, Mike Lee, or I'm concerned because this is a person who tried to overthrow a Democratic election, participated in a gambit to keep President Trump in that office after he lost. I'm concerned that that person's sharing a stage. I wonder how Apple feels about that. I'm noticing that the comments just get deleted. So this is clearly, I mean, I would say if you're not willing to let the comments stand, that it's maybe a sensitive issue. But I do think it's an interesting question for a community that has probably some beliefs, some wishes in the tech industry or around issues related to tech that might actually be in conflict with some of the things that we've seen Senator Lee support.
Dan, I'd love to hear you comment here because in my experience, it's very common for tech leaders to join senators. And I'm sure there's some political reasons for that. I remember when Senator Hatch had Mark Zuckerberg at BYU in the Marriott Center. And it just always is interesting to me. Dan, what do you see in the politics of senators with tech leaders?
Well, and let's not lose sight of the fact that it's not just the senator. It is the senior ranking senator from Utah, Mike Lee. And actually, that matters, right? And I know that, you know, Mitt Romney is older as a person. But years of service and all of that ranking stuff matters back in D.C. to all those folks. And so I'm pretty confident that if Tim Cook was going to come, include a political conversation, that he would be with the ranking member of the Utah delegation. And it doesn't matter who you are or where you are, he would go with whoever that is. So if the roles were reversed, it would be Mitt Romney. If Natalie, you happen to be the ranking senator from Utah, you would be on that stage. Shireen, same thing.
And wouldn't we be lucky?
Well, you know, I don't know if it has to do with luck. You have to actually run, and that, you know, winning may be a luck thing, but I just say that it doesn't surprise me that he's with Senator Lee, and I don't think people should read too much into it. This is the ranking member of the federal delegation.
Yeah. Dan, stay with you for just a minute. Lee is also making a lot of news because he's blasting the Biden vaccine mandate proposal, basically making all sorts of points about, you know, how we shouldn't put this burden on employers. I've got a quote here I'll read. Lee said, President Biden now wants to force employers to act as a sort of medical police force. They must impose a vaccine mandate on their workforce or be forced to pay a heavy fine. So, Dan, what do you make of what the senior senator's doing there? And then we'll get Shireen to comment.
Well, putting it in the middle of the employment relationship, I think Senator Lee is asking the right question. Is that really the appropriate enforcement tool for the government? And, you know, creating a vaccine police force out of all of our employers, is that the right place to do this, right? And obviously, the Biden administration says yes, and Senator Lee says no. It will be interesting to see how this is debated. The fact that the bill has no co-sponsors yet tells you there's still a lot to consider, and this bill is very early in the process. But I tell you, the one thing it does do is it does put the Biden administration somewhat on notice, right? And I think that's important as the Biden administration is considering these mandates, that they have the alternative voice and that that alternative debate is being had, because doing this by executive fiat is not a good place to be doing it anyway. But I guarantee Shireen is now going to tell us why Congress isn't very functional, and so it's the only way he can do it. And so I take nothing away from that argument. I'm just saying doing it by executive order isn't very healthy for the country.
Shireen, happy to have you comment there if you'd like.
Well, appreciate Dan making my points for me as now he's listened to me long enough. But what I would say is that I do think it contributes to an overall undermining of our trust in public health officials and the communication that's happening around the vaccine. Natalie, as we were speaking before the show, I do feel like this raises questions and asks us to stand in a place that is fundamentally questioning the science and questioning the experts. I think we should question, but what I don't think we should do is continue to undermine people when we have the research and the data to support the decisions that are moving forward. I think what Senator Lee is doing is dangerous.
Yeah. Okay. Senator Lee always has surprises for us. I remember one time, I just thought listeners would find this interesting, but he was on the cover of the Washington Post embracing Senator Bernie Sanders because they had introduced a resolution designed to end the U.S. Yemen civil war. And so he can do things that surprise you, but I would encourage him not to get on the wrong side of vaccines, because we need those to get our country out of this awful pandemic. Shireen, Friday, a couple hundred middle and high school students, mostly from the Salt Lake City School District, they gathered just outside the city and county building, and they marched to the state capitol. They were marching, calling for climate reforms. I have a feeling if you were a young middle school student, you may have been in that crowd.
Yeah, you know, if I wouldn't have been out of town, I would have been in that crowd now. I am absolutely inspired by what young people in our state are doing in terms of the organizing and the persistence that they've had around drawing attention and calling for meaningful action on climate change. So kudos to the kids. Kudos to all those who are working to keep this in top of mind, including Senator Romney, right?
Dan, if you didn't hear, they said, do not let our planet die. Climate change is not a lie.
Well, it sounds like when he's done with the Senate job that he's got a great position making protest signs.
Yeah. We've got LDS conference coming up. Dan, I wonder if there's anything you could share with our listeners that would capture the political moment that LDS church leaders are in with vaccines, with, you know, division in our polity, and going into a worldwide general conference. What are you expecting this weekend?
You know, I expect there to be at least one talk, kind of like Elder or President Oaks had last conference, to talk about, you know, the importance of, you know, getting along and
civil society,
disagreeing politically, but still being friends. Yeah, civil society kind of thing. I expect there to be one of those. But I don't necessarily see leadership taking stronger positions than they already have on, you know, vaccines or masks or those kinds of things. They tend to reserve those for alternative forums and not have them at general conference.
Shireen, it didn't go unnoticed to me that the Washington Post, I believe it was, had this very interesting article about the younger set in the LDS faith and their liberal tendencies. Now, I have not read the article. I've just scanned it, but can you summarize it for the listeners, or just give us your take on it?
Well, the thing that I thought was interesting about it, and I would say this is something that I've experienced myself, is that the what it looks at is a basic split that's happening among millennials, that there tends to be just a much more even split when it comes to political affiliation, and that there also, you know, is a one of the other interesting themes throughout the article is the way that younger church members think about and feel about the LGBTQ community, or really wanting to have, you know, a safe space, a safe religion, I would say, for members of the queer community to be a part of. And there's a really interesting kind of take on all of that happening throughout this article. But I found it curious. It reflected some of the things that I've experienced when, for example, out marching for climate change, I found myself shoulder to shoulder with individuals that attend the ward in my neighborhood. And I do see that there is a moderation or even a liberalization of some of the younger members. And I mm-hmm. wonder what that means for the future of the church.
I'll just say, from the political middle, as a active Latter-day Saint and someone who, you know, follows sort of social movements and the like, I'm a believer, and I'm going to merge these two comments, that article and the general conference of the church, to say that there's a lot of people that believe that the next generation of Mormonism, as we might say, will be to focus on the marginalized. To focus on in a way that, you know, Christ would encourage people to do. And that seems to be a movement. And I would encourage people to read Patrick Mason's book about the next generation of Mormonism and the definition of restoration. I think our listeners will find it interesting. Dan and Shireen, we're almost out of time. Dan, you mentioned that there's another proposal to re-expand Bear's Ears. What is that? What's with that?
Well, you saw the request by the tribal council to go ahead and reconsider re-expanding the Bear's Ears National Monument beyond what, you know, Congressman Curtis passed in a bill that, you know, did narrow, that kind of acknowledged where the Trump boundaries were and made some other trades that were key positional pieces. But obviously the tribes have concerns about, you know, destroying rock art. You go down the list of some of these great places that are there. And, you know, I'm not sure how, you know, changing the, you know, because they're concerned about grazing and more vehicle traffic going in there. I'm not sure how changing the boundaries of, you know, of Bear's Ears at this point and expanding it again is going to bring any peace to the conversation. My understanding was that we'd reached some peace, and so it's surprising to hear it come back up again.
Shireen, I'm enough of a middle of the road person that I'd just take the middle point between one proposal and the other and call it good and be done with it and fund this place and take care of this place. We've got about a minute left. Shireen, your quick comments here, either on Bears Ears or anything else you want to weigh in on.
You know, I'm classically in the Save Grand Staircase, Restore Bears Ears camp.
I will, for Thanksgiving, I will be spending it down in Bears Ears. I've already got my reservations. I've got a permit to go to Moon House, beautiful ruins there. Yeah, so some good things. Dan and Shireen, we're out of time, but I'll give each of you a chance to just give one bit of quick advice to our listeners about how to have a great week.
Oh, here's one. Local elections are coming up. You have time now to engage with the people who are running for city council. City council seats are up all over the state. So please start researching and get ready to vote.
Dan?
My advice is, once you've done that research, get off of the computer and go outside, because the fall is when Utah, in my opinion, is the best place in the world. And if you stay indoor to research those local candidates too long, you're going to miss it.
You got it there. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Dan McKay, Shireen Gorbani. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. We really appreciate you taking a listen.